your daytime radio newspaper with Bernardine Flynn.
Hello, friends. This is Bernardine Flynn bringing you another of our news programs, your daytime radio newspaper. Durward Kirby is going to tell you about the big, important news. I will tell you about the little human things that are happening to people everywhere. And now, Durward, what's the big news today?
The German war machine is rocking under heavy blows from many directions today. In Italy, an Allied spokesman says the German line before Rome is breaking, and the Germans have begun an orderly retreat. American spearheads on that battlefront have stabbed forward another 3 miles to bring the key towns of Isernia and Venafro within artillery range. These new gains give our forces complete observation on the broad Garigliano River Valley. The present German defenses are sagging under the heavy Allied pressure, but as the enemy gives up, his delaying actions are still an obstacle to our forward push. The German opposition is described as still very stiff. On the Adriatic side of the Italian peninsula, the British 8th Army has pushed across the Trigno River to establish a second bridgehead on that stream. In the air, Allied flyers yesterday knocked down 37 enemy planes, their biggest bag in weeks. 30 of these were destroyed by the Flying Fortresses and Liberators, which raided Wiener Neustadt, just below Vienna. That raid, incidentally, is described as one of the most successful ever carried out in the Mediterranean theater. Meantime, we learned that on Monday, American medium bombers knocked out an Italian cruiser, which had been seized by the Germans. Reconnaissance pictures showed the cruiser lying on its starboard side in a big patch of oil in Ancona Harbor on Italy's Adriatic coast. At the time of the attack, the Yankee flyers thought they had hit a large merchant ship. American Marauder bombers based in Britain roared out over the English Channel this morning to blast German airfields in northern France. And today, the largest force of American heavy bombers yet dispatched from Britain raided northwest Germany. First reports give no indication of their targets. A new note on air war comes from Yugoslavia. Partisan sources say Russia is preparing to send planes to aid the partisan air force, which is being organized by Yugoslav pilots using captured enemy planes. As for the fighting in Russia, that continues to go well. Cossack cavalrymen are pounding across the Nogaysk steppes to round up more remnants of beaten German armies. The complete annihilation of the enemy is expected within the next several days. The Russians are cutting through the disorganized enemy columns with almost bewildering speed. Informed military observers in London say Germany stands to lose at least 100,000 men in this present fighting in South Russia. The Germans are still putting up their bitterest resistance in the Kryvyi Rog area, where they are holding open a narrow corridor of escape for German troops in the Dnieper Bulge. Even in that area, the Russians are advancing relentlessly. In Cairo, diplomats from Turkey and the Allied nations are gathering for a conference which may determine very definitely Turkey's future status. Some observers expect the United Nations to hand Turkey a virtual invitation to war. Meanwhile, a note of discord in the Allied camp has been sounded in Algiers. French General de Gaulle has demanded that France be given an equal role with the other major Allied powers in the settlement of world issues arising out of the war. Around the world, Admiral Halsey describes the American invasion of Bougainville as our greatest venture yet in that South Pacific area, and he adds, the Japanese know they cannot halt us. There are few new details on the Bougainville fighting today. It is revealed, however, that Japanese cruisers and destroyers attempted to attack our positions Monday night. They were intercepted by an American naval task force and, after an apparently heavy engagement, fled northward. Results of this naval action aren't known in full, but the fact that the Japanese warships hightailed it out of the area indicates that they probably suffered another beating. The Tokyo radio, by the way, speaks of naval and air battles to come in the showdown battle for Rabaul, New Britain. That's just what American leaders are hoping for. They would love to get the Japanese fleet in a free-for-all scrap. An insight on Japan's war effort is available today from American reporters who are among those nationals being brought back to this country on the liner Gripsholm after almost 2 years of Japanese internment. The Gripsholm reached Port Elizabeth, South Africa, this morning. The American correspondents say the Japs show no sign of cracking morale. They report wartime fanaticism, tight army control, mounting shortages of food, and doubled living costs. But they also report that the Japanese people are accepting these hardships as part of the game and are prepared to back the war effort for at least 5 more years. Here in this country, scattered state and city elections have given Republican candidates a number of victories over their Democratic opponents, and the GOP is eyeing the results as indicative of a trend which they hope will lead them back to the White House in 1944. This morning, the deadline passed for coal miners to return to the mines under President Roosevelt's directive. Generally, that directive has been ignored in the major producing states as the miners continue on strike. Well, that's the top of the day's big news, and now let's turn to the colorful human interest side of the news with Bernardine Flynn.
Somewhere in Britain, thousands of American soldiers are going through invasion exercises at the American Assault School, which prepares men for the time when they will have to storm the shores of Europe. The practice sessions are very realistic, with real bullets and live bombs. The other day, United Press correspondent Dudley Ann Harmon paid a visit to this school. She is one of two women allowed to witness recent exercises, and I'd like to tell you her reaction to this specialized training. Miss Harmon says, at a quiet English town, a group of correspondents found the nearest thing in existence to the European invasion coast, a model of the enemy's defenses, with concrete pillboxes, booby traps, and barbed wire entanglements. Waves of boys from every section of the United States tried out these defenses under real bullets and explosives, landing from the same boats they will use to invade Europe. Casualties occur even in this practice. Before Miss Harmon was allowed to watch American infantry slam into German defenses, she and the other correspondents were warned of the danger. Colonel John Horton, who was in charge of the operation, told them, "All possible precautions have been taken for your safety, but we can't guarantee that you won't be killed. Yesterday, we had a general with us, and a bomb landed 40 feet behind him." Then the infantry exercise got underway. This is how Miss Harmon describes it. First, the barrage started. The noise shut out everything else in the world, and the ground shook. A pall of smoke from mortars hid the ridge ahead. We started forward. The barrage increased, and I hid in a sand dune. A pillbox ahead blew up with a terrific roar. Then we went on again. A Spitfire above whined and dived to send machine gun fire into the ground. We went on with the smoke of 100 shells around us. For 95 minutes, we watched this dose of death while the soldiers went calmly about their business with concern only for the battle. "Frankly," says Miss Harmon, "I wanted to scream." In the Air Force units overseas, P-47 Thunderbolt squadrons are taking something of a ribbing from the pilots of P-38 Lightnings. It seems that the Lightning pilots have looked up the dictionary definition of a thunderbolt. It says, a large crash of noise, causing no damage, immediately followed by a bolt of lightning. However, don't be surprised if the thunderbolt flyers finally dig up something with which to come back at the lightning pilots. Our American boys are like that. They fight, and in between times make the most of their native sense of humor.
Say, Bernardine, you're pretty observing. Maybe you've noticed how more and more people are taking lunchboxes to work these days.
Goodness, yes. And that's something I wanted to talk about in connection with Crisco. You know, it's so important now that lunchboxes not only be appetizing, but digestible, too. And with Crisco, lunchboxes like that are as easy as 1, 2, 3. There are pastry turnovers with all kinds of tasty fillings. One of chopped ham always hits the spot, doesn't it? And when Crisco handles the crust, you can be sure of a turnover that melts in your mouth. Even when it's cold, it's still flaky and digestible.
Oh, that's the way to tell a Crisco crust.
And here's another Crisco trick for a lunchbox. Cook frankfurters and slit them just enough to spread mustard inside. Then dip them in a fritter batter and Crisco fry. They can come out crisp and golden brown. And like everything you fry in Crisco, so digestible.
And what's a lunchbox without a big hunk of layer cake to make it swell eating?
The kind of cake Crisco makes. Honestly, you can save your butter for the table, because Crisco cakes turn out so wonderfully light and fluffy.
Well, golly, no matter what you cook with Crisco, you can be sure it will be swell-tasting, really digestible. Crisco is the finest quality shortening you can use. It's pure and all vegetable. And as 9 out of 10 doctors say, digestible itself. So, for really good eating, truly digestible food, try Crisco.
You will be delighted at how good your meals will taste. Tonight, Naples will again be bathed in the soft flow of light. Light that symbolizes an Allied victory. Light that represents civilization and humanity. Light that ends the darkness imposed by the cruel hand of the German invader. Yesterday, the electric power was tested for the first time. For 4 hours before the switch was thrown, Naples was a dead city. 500,000 Neapolitans, under orders from our army, moved out of their beloved homes. And in long lines that stretched almost as far as the eye could see, they walked up into the hills. And from there, they looked down on the bomb-torn, wrecked and pillaged city. They looked down on their homes and stores, half fearing, half believing that some great hidden German mine would explode when the Allied engineers turned on the master switches. We're all happy to know that there was no explosion. And those switches, once again, are pouring light into section after section of Naples, from the fashionable residential districts to the humble tenant areas, from the waterfront to the Via Roma.
On the home front, the OPA has taken steps to end the shortage of shoes for small children.
That's good news, Durward. Tell us about it, please.
Well, the OPA says that sometime around the first of the year, you may start buying a new supply of non-leather shoes for children, and you won't need any rations points for them. The new shoes will have canvas uppers.
Oh, I see. Something like gym or tennis shoes?
Well, no, apparently not. The OPA explains that the soles of the new shoes will be made out of heavy woven fabric, and in addition, they'll be reinforced with vulcanized rubber. The new shoes are mainly for children up to 8 years of age and should give them a lot of extra mileage.
Well, I know that'll be welcome news to parents who have growing youngsters.
And this is another encouraging development. The OPA General Manager, Bowles, reports that more than 12 million Americans have signed pledges to observe rationing rules and price regulations.
Well, that looks like a good start in the drive to stamp out the black market. And the OPA, by the way, also has given us some new rationing dates. For meats, fats, and so forth, 4 brown stamps in War Ration Book 3 will soon be good. You may use Stamp L starting November 21st, Stamp M November 28th, Stamp N December 5th, and Stamp P December 12th. They all expire January 1st.
And from now on, all pickles, that is, all except fresh cucumber pickles, will cost more. The OPA has announced new price ceilings which will increase the cost of pickles about 1 cent for each quart jar. Say, Bernardine, didn't I hear you say that when a meal is shy on points, a little Crisco could work a lot of magic?
A whole lot. You're really never on the spot with Crisco to give you food that's wonderfully appetizing and really digestible. And you can count on Crisco for both. Whether it's stretching a handful of leftovers with a smooth, velvety cream sauce, or giving a party air to a little bit of meat with flaky pastry turnovers.
And don't forget, Crisco cakes put appetizing and digestible on a skimpy meal.
They certainly do. Have you ever tasted anything as delicious as a Crisco cake? They're so wonderfully light. Lighter even than cakes you can make with high point shortening.
I'll say, tasting good, being digestible, is just naturally true of everything you cook with Crisco. Crisco is pure and all vegetable, you know. Digestible itself. Why, Crisco is the finest quality shortening you can use. So, for meals that taste swell, digest easy, you better try Crisco. And here is a Thanksgiving note from the OPA. The younger your turkey is, the more you're going to have to pay for it. The birds have been put into 2 classes, old and young. And an OPA official describes them this way. An old turkey is one that has really been around. A young Tom, on the other hand, doesn't even know his way around the barnyard. Out in Oklahoma City, Woody Hunt, who as president of the State League of Young Democrats always hoped he'd get a letter from the President of the United States. At last he did. It was an order for Hunt's induction. Well, friends, that's all for now. Join us tomorrow for another edition of your daytime radio newspaper.
Durward Kirby will bring you the big news.
Bernardine Flynn will give you the colorful human interest side of the news.
And we're both saying goodbye for Procter & Gamble, the makers of Crisco.
We return you now to New York.
I love a mystery. Who's the ruthless vampire stalking in dark alleys, murdering innocent victims? Hear that terrifying, tense tale of terror. Follow Doc Long and Jack Packard through dark, eerie passages. Discover the mystery of the secret trap door tonight on I Love a Mystery.
Crisco's radio newspaper with Bernardine Flynn. Brought to you by Crisco, the pure all-vegetable shortening. It's digestible. Now, Bernardine Flynn.
Thank you, Durward, and hello, friends. Before Durward Kirby brings us the latest world news, I want to tell you a little story about Sergeant Louis Newbar, who is stationed at Fort Douglas, Utah. Sergeant Newbar, it seems, just doesn't like to be crowded. So, for a long time, he's made it a practice to get up a little earlier than the rest of the soldiers in the barracks so he can shave ahead of the washroom rush. The other morning, he was awakened by noises coming from the squad room. Time to get up, he said to himself, and drowsily threw the covers back and hustled down to shave. He carefully finished the job and then returned to the barracks, for some reason or other not feeling as though he'd had enough sleep. And when he re-entered the barracks, the truth dawned on him. No wonder he felt as though he hadn't slept enough. It was only 1 o'clock in the morning. The noise he'd heard was some of the boys just coming in. And now, Durward, what's the latest world news?
American heavy bombers picked up the air offensive against Western Europe this morning, Byrne. Our flying fortresses blasted targets at Brunswick, one of Germany's major manufacturers of aircraft engines, as well as an important communications center. The fortresses were escorted into their target by formations of American and British fighters. Early reports say there was heavy anti-aircraft fire, but practically no German fighter plane opposition. Our Liberators and other planes also bombed the French invasion coast. In London, Britain's Air Minister, Sir Archibald Sinclair, says that air supremacy over Germany to blast open the road to Berlin now lies within the grasp of the Allies. He says that our historic aerial offensive is producing visible, measurable, and progressive results. However, Sinclair cautions that Germany is still capable of striking back in heavy force. General Arnold, the United States Army's Air Chief, has commended the 15th Air Force in Italy for last week's raids on German aircraft plants. He says that those attacks laid the foundations for final and decisive operations in the future. In Italy, the heaviest artillery duels in 10 days have broken the lull on the Anzio beachhead. British troops have broken up a series of small German attacks, and other Allied troops have mopped up a number of Germans who wriggled through the lines near Cassino. From Russia, Premier Joseph Stalin has sent a message to President Roosevelt predicting that the time is near when the Allies will defeat Hitlerite Germany. On the Russian battlefronts today, the Red Army is racing over the approaches to Pskov and nearing the outskirts of the town itself. In Moscow, a special Russian atrocity commission has made a full report on the brutality of German occupation forces at Kiev. The commission is holding Field Marshal von Manstein, the German commander in southern Russia, responsible for 195,000 murders in the Kiev area. Finland's parliament held a secret session this morning, presumably to discuss chances for an acceptable separate peace with Russia. And there is also a report that Sweden will do its best to provide Finland with food if the Finns get out of the war. On the other side of the world, there is good news in our war against the Japs. First of all, the Navy Department reveals that our submarines have sunk 14 more Japanese merchant vessels. And in New Delhi, Admiral Mountbatten has issued an order of the day to his forces in Burma, saying that their complete victory on the Arakan Front has given the Japanese a crack they will remember. In the Southwest Pacific, American air and naval forces have delivered another heavy blow to Japanese shipping, destroying or damaging 29 Japanese planes, 34 barges, and 2 cargo ships. And the Japs admit that they lack sufficient aircraft to cope with the growing Allied offensive actions. In this hemisphere, in Buenos Aires, the police say that they seized documents of the German Trans-Ocean News Agency to prove that it was connected with spy rings in countries bordering Argentina. Also, the Tokyo Radio, by the way, has come forth with one of the best of the war's wisecracks. Unconscious variety, that is. After telling of new American successes, the Jap announcer asked, "What shall we do now?" And then solemnly answered his own question by saying, "Now is the time that the people of Japan should stand up with resolute determination, glaring at the enemy."
Well, some Marine probably has the answer to that one with, "Glare ahead, brother, we're coming in anyway." And that's the top of today's world news. Now, Bernardine, I believe you have something of interest for our listeners.
The other day I was talking to a woman who runs a cooking school, and we got to comparing notes, particularly about Crisco. She said she'd just never seen so many dyed-in-the-wool butter users who are being won over to Crisco for cakes.
Well, that wasn't any surprise to you, was it, Fern?
No, but I'm glad I'm not the only one who's noticing it. Really, friends, don't you think butter for cakes got to be kind of a habit? Why, with Crisco, you can make some of the best-tasting cakes you ever put in your mouth. Full of flavor, wonderful texture, and light as a feather. Like the maple walnut cake I made yesterday. You just add chopped walnuts to a regular yellow layer cake batter. And for the frosting, use a boiled icing with maple syrup in it. Anyway, the cake was delicious. As good as any butter cake ever thought of being.
And what about that lighter cake secret of Crisco's, Bern?
Oh, yes. Why, friends, do you know that with Crisco, you can make a lighter cake than with any other shortening, even the most expensive? It's amazing to think a shortening can make that much difference. But you just try a Crisco cake and see. See if you ever tasted a cake quite as light or one that was quite as good.
Now, Bernardine, how about another story?
This is a story about the Red Cross, Durward. Not long ago, Red Cross relief representatives were standing on a dock under a hot African sun and watching a large gray refugee ship move in through the harbor. There were children on board, 300 or 400 young refugees from Greece. There were adults on the ship, too, many of them ill, others forlorn and bewildered. They had seen their country ruthlessly devastated by the Germans. For most of them, everything they'd ever owned had been lost. They had only the baggage they carried. One very old lady refused the assistance of a young native boy who ran out to help her. She was afraid to let her few pitiful belongings out of her sight. Then there was a little girl, blonde and blue-eyed and not more than 6 years old. She had no baggage at all. All she owned was on her back, a shapeless dress made from an old burlap sack. As the refugees streamed onto the dock, Red Cross workers passed among them, distributing refreshments and clothing and making assignments for temporary homes. The little girl in the burlap was given a new Red Cross dress. She didn't know what to say. She hugged it to her and stared at the Red Cross worker with unbelieving eyes. It had been so long since she'd had anything pretty or clean or new. The next day, though, the Red Cross workers were surprised to see the little girl still wearing her ragged gunny sack dress. "Where's your new dress, dear?" the Red Cross lady asked her. "Did you lose it?" The child was silent for a moment. Then she looked up timidly and said, "Please, my mother had to stay behind in Greece. Someday I'm going back and find her. And please, I want to save my Red Cross dress for her." Heartwarming, sincere little stories like this are told every day by the thousands of Red Cross workers all over the world. The Red Cross is on the job, lending a helping hand on the battlefields, in the liberated countries, and on the home front. They help the needy regardless of race or color or nationality. Tomorrow, friends, the Red Cross begins its annual membership drive. The goal is set high this year, for there is much work to be done. That means we must back the Red Cross more than ever. You and I, and the people who live up the street, and those around the corner, and on the other side of town. Each one of us must do all we can to see that this great organization is kept going at full strength. When one of the volunteer workers calls on us, let's give and give again, for the Red Cross needs our help.
You're very right, Bern. Our contributions couldn't go for a better cause.
By the way, Durward, how was your trip to New York last week?
Oh, it was swell, Bern, just swell. It was a bond-selling trip, you know, and we really sold the bonds, approximately $10 million worth in all.
Wonderful.
And it was the first time I'd been to New York in 10 years.
Oh?
And believe me, it sure has changed. The thing that struck me most was the number of different uniforms you see on the sidewalks of New York. I saw fighting men and women from every one of the United Nations and from every branch of their armed forces. It was really a wonderful sight. And it sort of set my spine to tingling to know that all those people, New Zealanders, Canadians, British, French, Dutch, Russians, and all the others are fighting shoulder to shoulder with us to help make the world a happier place in which to live. And just to look at their faces, you just know we can't lose.
Oh, it must have been thrilling, Gary.
It surely was. You know, I also got a big kick out of going up to the top of the Empire State Building. A stranger in town, you know.
Yeah.
We were 1,028 feet above the street, 102 stories, and the wind that day was blowing 55 miles an hour at that height.
Ooh.
And listen, when you get to New York again, Vern,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to miss a ride on the Staten Island Ferry. It's a half-hour trip for just a nickel.
Wow.
And the subways, you can ride all over the city for 5 cents. You really get your money's worth in transportation out of a nickel in New York.
Well, how are traveling conditions, Durward?
Pretty crowded. You know, I couldn't get a plane reservation Sunday night, and I was lucky, very lucky, to get train tickets. I tell you, the government means it when it says very sincerely, please don't travel unless you have to, because everything is jam-packed.
And now, Durward, what's the latest on the home front?
Well, the OPA announced just about 2 hours ago that the point values of pork and many beef cuts will be sharply reduced starting Sunday. The pork reductions will range from 1 to 3 points, and only spare ribs will remain unchanged. The beef cuts used for roasts, rib steaks, and stews also will be reduced 1 to 2 points. The OPA says, on the average, we will get 8% more meat next month. However, point values for veal, lamb, mutton, butter, cheese, lard, and other dairy products will be unchanged in March.
Durward, what's the latest on the draft today?
Reports from nearly every state in the Union show that draft quotas are not being met.
What's the answer to that, Durward?
There are various opinions. Senator Johnson and Senator Wheeler disagree with President Roosevelt's medical commission and think the armed forces should lower their physical standards to take more 4Fs. And others point out that about the only substantial manpower pool left, that is outside of the fathers, is the group of 2 million single men with occupational deferments. And of course, you know that President Roosevelt has ordered all occupational deferments reviewed.
Elsewhere on the home front, the Commerce Department says that 1 out of every 3 American families now has an income of more than $3,000 a year. That compares with only 1 in 10 families between 1935 and 1940.
And another survey shows that it takes at least $13.23 a week to buy food for a family of 5 in New York City. And that's $2.16 more than last year. Say, Bernd, someone asked me why ration tokens are needed. Can you explain that?
Oh, easily. You see, red stamps and blue stamps in Ration Book 4 will each be worth 10 points. Instead of getting your change in stamps, you now get tokens, which are good indefinitely. Do you ever experiment when you're cooking? You know, make up recipes? Well, last week I had some bologna, and I thought, well, now that would be grand for dinner if I can just think of some new way of cooking it.
I think I smell a recipe coming along.
Well, I did put together a dish I thought was good. It's very simple. Bologna and noodle put together, I called it. Maybe you'd like to try it. You just fry cubes of bologna, chopped onion, and some sliced mushrooms in piping hot Crisco. When the bologna and onion have a nice crisp brown look, mix in the cooked noodles and heat thoroughly. Then serve. I think your family will like it. Mine cleaned up every last speck.
And ladies, don't forget that with Crisco in your frying pan, you don't have to worry about upset digestions either.
I should say not. Why, Crisco fried foods are so digestible, even the youngsters can enjoy them.
You see, Crisco is pure and all vegetable, digestible itself, and it's the finest quality shortening you can use. Now, remember, with Crisco, everything you cook tastes better, and it's digestible.
And now, Durward, what's our last story?
It seems that Navy chaplains never forget themselves, even though they do travel in an atmosphere of, purple vocabularies. Take, for instance, Chaplain Lonnie Meacham of Virginia Beach. As the story goes, he was standing in the chow line when someone accidentally spilled hot soup on him. The dignified chaplain didn't say a word for a moment, and then he slowly turned around to the men behind him, and he said, would some of you fellas say a few appropriate words, please? Well, friends, that's all for now. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Crisco's Radio Newspaper.
Durward Kirby will bring you the latest world news.
Bernardine Flynn will give you the colorful human interest side of the news.
And we're both saying goodbye for Crisco. It's digestible.
tomorrow. Be listening when Willie and Jeffrey Powell enter the dining room at the Rushville Center House. Be listening at this same time tomorrow to Ma Perkins. Until tomorrow, then, this is Charlie Warren saying so long. And remember, I should all watch. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Crisco's radio newspaper with Bernardine Flynn, brought to you by Crisco, the pure all-vegetable shortening. It's digestible. And now, Bernardine Flynn.
Thank you, Durward, and hello, friends. In just a moment, Durward Kirby will bring us a report on today's world news. But first, let me tell you about the happy homecoming of a group of American servicemen. Yesterday, some 1,500 suntanned Navy CBs arrived in San Francisco, as happy as youngsters with a piece of candy at seeing American shores again. These men belonged to the first two units of CBs ever organized and had been down in the South Pacific for 23 months, practically 2 years. Foreign lands and customs were interesting, but the good old USA was home. As their big gray transport nosed into the San Francisco dock yesterday, the CBs yelled and cheered, and three military bands broke out with stirring music. Everybody was gloriously happy. Then the CBs saw a group of waves standing on the dock. "Look, fellows," one of them shouted. "Look, there's women with shoes on." And now, Durward, what's the latest news?
First off, Bern, there's been another heavy American air raid on Berlin. Strong forces of our flying fortresses and liberators attacked industrial targets in the German capital this morning. Some idea of the size of the raid can be gained from the Air Force announcement that today's formations dropped more than 350,000 incendiary bombs and more than 10,000 high explosives. Earlier this morning, American medium bombers flew over the channel to strike at German targets in Holland. Last night, RAF bombers made a heavy raid on railway targets about 100 miles southwest of Paris. On the Italian battlefront, savage night fighting is reported to have broken out in the battered streets and buildings of Cassino. There has been no decisive change in the battle lines inside the town, but fierce fighting is reported still in progress. In the Anzio beachhead sector, the Germans apparently have begun moving up troops and armor for the fourth major offensive against the British and American forces. At the moment, the only fighting taking place on the beachhead is in the form of minor patrol activity. Russia's armies are reported using special mud sledges in their drive across the quagmire battlefronts of the southwestern Ukraine. The Soviets have outflanked Tarnopol, a vital junction on the main trunk railroad between Odessa and Warsaw. The Germans are rushing up air reserves and undertaking counterattacks in a desperate effort to halt the Russian drive toward Romania. But the Russians are pushing ahead, counterattacks or no counterattacks. On the international diplomatic and political front, there are a couple of new developments today. British newspapers say Russia has rejected Polish counterproposals concerning the boundary dispute. But the Polish premier in exile says his government has not been informed of such action. Two Yugoslav cabinet members have arrived in London in an effort to patch up the differences between King Peter's government and Marshal Tito, the leader of the partisan forces fighting the Germans in Yugoslavia. And Britain's Foreign Secretary, Anthony Eden, says that Britain is keeping a close watch on the Argentine situation in South America, conducting only routine matters with the Faro government until the confusion and uncertainty surrounding the picture are cleared up. On the production front, Britain's production minister, Oliver Littleton, discloses that Britain turned out more than 90,000 planes from the beginning of the war to the end of 1943. Britain, meantime, is having more coal mine trouble, with the strike of Welsh miners spreading to additional mines. Out in the Pacific, American forces have made new strides in their drive against the Japanese. We have gained control of Los Negros Island in the Admiralty Group, leapfrogged up the north coast of New Britain to within 170 miles of Rabaul, and driven up the south coast of New Britain to within 50 miles of Gazmata. On the Asiatic mainland, the jaws of a Chinese-American trap are closing rapidly on Japanese forces in Burma. And in the Central Pacific, new air raids have been made against the Marshalls and the Carolines. And that's the top of today's world news. Now, Bernadine?
I was thinking about a friend of mine who called up the other morning. You see, friend, she was expecting company for dinner that night and was all set to make a pie for dessert. Then it started to rain, and that meant no pie, she said. Well, I couldn't figure the connection to save my life. And then she told me when it rained, she just never had good luck with pie crust.
You mean that she didn't know about Crisco's pastry method?
No, she didn't. And telling her almost made me late for the program.
Oh.
You know, friend, you never have to worry about pastry failures when you use the new Crisco pastry method. You get tender, flaky pie crust every single time. Even beginners get grand results. Pie crust so tender and flaky, they're eaten to the last crumb. There's no worry about upset digestions either. Made with Crisco, pie set just as light as can be, digestible for the whole family. It just seems as though Crisco and the pastry method were the answer to any pie maker's dream. And the directions are right on the label of your Crisco jar.
I tell you, you're going to be awful busy making pies once you try it. I'll bet you the family wants pie for dessert every other night.
Well, maybe not quite that often. But I'll tell you one thing, they'll eat every smidgen of every pie you make.
I'll see.
Just you try Crisco and the new Crisco pastry method and see. You can count on this. It'll be tender, flaky pie crust every time.
Well, Bern, how about another story?
Here's a story, Durward, about the people of occupied Europe. People who are past masters in the art of heckling the Germans. Probably no nation has developed this specialized science with any greater skill than Poland. But then Poland was the first to be occupied. This little story from Warsaw will show you what I mean. The other day, the Germans in Warsaw were very, very busy because suddenly, official-looking posters had appeared all over the Polish capital, in shop windows, on street corners, lamp posts, and wherever people were likely to gather. The posters were supposedly signed by Wilhelm Koppe, head of the German police in Warsaw. And of all things, they ordered all German nationals to leave the city and return to the fatherland. Well, you can imagine what confusion there was among the German residents. Within an hour or two after the posters appeared, Germans were rushing all over Warsaw trying to buy railroad tickets, drawing their money out of the banks and buying what groceries they could. While all that was going on, the German police were also as busy as cats on a tin roof. They were scurrying all around Warsaw trying to convince their panic-stricken fellow countrymen that the posters were fake. All day long, they tore down the posters, which had been distributed by the Polish underground, and replaced them with a real proclamation by Police Chief Koppe, which told of the hoax. But even then, many of the Germans didn't know whether they should go home or stay in Warsaw, for they are so used to German propaganda by now that it's pretty hard to tell them anything else, even the truth.
Bern, as you know, representatives of all the occupied countries have set up exile governments in London. Well, the other day, some officials of the Dutch government had some very, very secret documents they wanted a photographer to reproduce. But they wouldn't let the photographer work on them unless he promised not to look. Well, he promised. He put on a blindfold and went to work, with the Dutch officials watching every move he made. The negatives he took were hardly dry before they were whisked into a sturdy satchel and hidden from all view. The photographer smiled to himself as he took off the blindfold and then turned to the officials. By the way, he asked, are those secret papers written in Dutch? Yes, the men replied. The photographer smiled even more. Well, he said, they might just as well have been written in double Dutch. We didn't need the blindfold because I can't read a word of your language.
Oh, goodness. Now, Durward, here's a story that disproves the belief that all army sergeants are tough and hard-boiled. The Army Sea Ration Hardtack, as you may have heard from your soldier friends, is usually known by the more familiar name of Rock. The soldiers, it seems, think that name describes the food very appropriately. Well, for a number of days, cases of that hardtack kept piling up outside of an American mess tent in Italy. Nobody wanted it, of course, as long as there was anything else to eat. In fact, few soldiers even bothered to take the hard candies, which are included with all sea rations. But then, each night, Corporal John Scavetta of North Bergen, New Jersey, began appearing at the mess tent and collecting all the hardtack and candy that were left over. Corporal Scavetta is a very quiet young fellow, so you can imagine how he jumped when a burly sergeant caught him taking the food one night and gruffly asked him what he thought he was doing. The corporal shifted from one foot to the other and looked around nervously as though he were afraid someone was going to court-martial him. Then he explained, "There are a lot of refugees out there in Campania. You ought to see them eat these biscuits. Eat them like they were cake. I take the candy out to the children. You ought to hear them holler when they see me." Of course, the corporal knew this was against regulations. What went through the sergeant's mind about army regulations, we'll never know. Anyway, the sergeant didn't say a word, but looked cautiously over his shoulder and then dropped the hardtack he was holding into Corporal Scavetta's hand. Then he hunted through his pockets until he found several packs of candy. He added those to the pile, then turned and walked off with a grin a mile wide on his face. Yes, army sergeants have a heart, despite all that's said about them. For instance, there's Sergeant Paul Capitan of Hartford, Connecticut, who rides around Italy in a tank named Boomerang, accompanied by a mascot named Butch. Butch is a monkey, and a former organ grinder's monkey at that. And like Mary's little lamb, wherever Sergeant Capitan goes, Butch is sure to follow, even in battle. When the fighting is the heaviest, Butch is in the tank turret. But when there are not too many anti-tank shells coming his way, he likes to ride on top of the tank's radio antenna. And it's becoming a familiar sight to see the huge Boomerang rumble across the bumpy fields with little Butch swaying back and forth from the antenna in complete rhythm. Butch is another symbol that our servicemen, even in the thick of battle, have time for the little human things in life. And now, Durward, what's the latest on the home front?
Well, Byrne, it looks as though the expected congressional battle over the OPA is about ready to start. As you know, the OPA is scheduled to go out of existence on June 30th unless Congress votes to extend its power. So far, no bill to that effect has been introduced into Congress, although one is expected shortly. Meantime, the Price Administrator, Mr. Bowles, says that the OPA program has saved us $89 billion so far in the war. And Economic Stabilization Director Vinson warns that if our present economic controls are weakened, billions of dollars will be added to the cost of the war. The cost of living will increase sharply, and the government will be hampered in its fight against inflation. Byrne, someone wants to know if meat and fat stamps will be handled the same as before.
Just the same. Under token rationing, the first 2 weeks, you'll have three red stamps worth 10 points each, or a total of 30 points for that two-week period.
I see. And speaking of red points, Byrne, according to the papers, pork is still on the plentiful side.
Oh, and well, excuse me, Durward, but...
Certainly.
That reminds me of a letter I got.
Huh?
Friend, you know how people like to pass recipes along. Well, a woman was writing me about what a grand help Crisco is to her in planning meals. And she mentioned a little trick she had for breading pork chops. It's to add a generous amount of poultry seasoning to the flour you use for breading the chops. I tried it the other night, and did those pork chops make a hit? You use just enough Crisco to cover the bottom of the skillet, and the chops come out so crisp and brown and so full of flavor.
And how about this? With Crisco frying those chops, you don't have to worry about digestions. Why, Crisco fried foods are so digestible, even the youngsters can pitch in.
That's right, friends. You see, Crisco is pure and all vegetable, digestible itself. And it's just the finest quality shortening you can use.
You betcha. With Crisco, everything you cook tastes better, and it's digestible. Now, Byrne, what's your last story?
Well, the mystery of what delayed a Boston elevated subway train at the Friend Street station the other day has finally been solved. It seems that Private John Conway was just getting home on a furlough. And as he stood in the station, the train rolled in. A pretty young girl guard put her head out from between two cars and called, "Friend Street, Friend Street." Private Conway took just one look, rushed up and kissed the guard. And as she confessed today, I'm afraid we did hold up the train while he hugged me. But the passengers say all is forgiven. For you see, the guard was Private Conway's wife.
Well, friends, that's all for now. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Crisco's Radio Newspaper.
Durward Kirby will bring you the latest world news.
Bernardine Flynn will give you the colorful human interest side of the news.
And we're both saying goodbye for Procter & Gamble, the makers of Crisco. It's digestible.
We return you now to New York.